This is Dylan.
This is Nick. And you're listening to
Colloquium, Colloquium.
Hello and welcome to Colloquium.
Hello and welcome to Colloquium.
You can't just repeat what I say. Yeah, that's not how
everything
this
else
works
to say. So good.
Well, this isn't going to go very well if you don't have anything positive to say.
Fair.
Anything fruitful to add to the conversation? Well, here we are. Nick, it's been probably what? How long has it been since we've recorded?
It's been a while. Two or three months, maybe.
I'd say two at least, yeah.
Yep.
We have been releasing episodes. You guys don't know our secret that we haven't been recording, but we recorded a bunch and then didn't get them kind of produced and edited in a timely fashion. So we've got those coming out. I think what we're going to try to do, we're going to try to do a two-week thing. So just about every 2 weeks, every other Monday, should be getting an episode out to you guys. I said it here on air, so we got to do it now.
Yeah, got to do it.
Got to stick to it.
I just repeated what you said again.
Yeah. Okay. Anything new in your life that our listeners need to know about?
Well, I'm not getting married, if that's what you're asking.
Oh, okay.
No, let's see. Yeah, I'm a soccer coach. I don't know if a lot of our listeners know that. So the soccer season is coming to a close a little bit here. It's definitely an exhausting experience, but so fulfilling. So, definitely good to have a break, but at the same time, it's just as sad to be leaving the players.
Just,
so.
You just repeated back-to-back championships,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, my older team, they're mostly seniors in high school. They won the Alabama State title again. Man. So, yeah, we're excited.
That's awesome. Yeah, and also I don't know if you saw this, I don't think I talked to you about this, but the JP2 boys cross country team, the high school I teach at, also repeated their state title in cross country. So
wow.
A lot of repeats going on.
Dang.
A lot of repeats.
Cool. Just two.
Two repeats. Two is a lot. Two is a lot of
repeats. Two is more than one.
All right. There is repeating happening.
Yes, there is.
Hey, Nick, Pete and repeat. We're on a boat. Oh, do you know that one?
No, stop. Don't do this.
You don't know that?
Let's not do this, man. Come on.
Pete fell off. Who was left?
Stop it. We're not repeating this darn joke.
Okay, fine. All right. So what are we talking about today?
Scrupulosity, I think, is the word.
Yeah.
That's try the word. Saying that.
Scrupulosity. Say that 10 times fast.
Okay.
So scrupulosity is the topic, but I think there's also just a general... I think it's an interesting topic, because scrupulosity ultimately... We'll get to defining it in a moment, but scrupulosity ultimately, it's a spiritual malady, a spiritual disease, kind of. And so I think with talking about scrupulosity, I think we also want to talk about in a more general sense of like, yeah, what's it look like to be spiritually healthy? Because scrupulosity, I think, is one way in which people often are very unhealthy and have an unhealthy approach to the spiritual life. But I think we also want to talk about what it looks like to actually have a healthy view of God and a healthy spiritual life.
Sure, yeah. This could go in a couple of different directions. We'll see what happens. But I think Dylan and I have, you know, experienced scrupulosity in our own lives as well.
Yeah.
So we're kind of bringing that experience to this conversation also, just to make our listeners aware.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and start out with defining it. I think we couldn't really settle on one definition that we loved, but we found a few different things. I think one, probably the shortest, most succinct way of putting it is probably spiritual OCD.
Right.
So it's obsessive compulsive disorder applied to the spiritual life.
Sure.
So that might look like, you know, you're obsessing over... what might seem to somebody else is very trivial, minor things going on. So it might be, you know, the slightest of venial sins you see as a mortal sin, and something that's not even a sin, you're freaking out and thinking it's a mortal sin, right?
Right.
So it's kind of this obsession over sin in a particularly unhealthy way. And I think we'll talk about why it's unhealthy and what makes it unhealthy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just to give my own spin on what Dylan said, it probably won't be anything different, but it's just a general anxiety or even a fear about sinning, just in general, you know? Yeah, that kind of conducts your actions you know, throughout your right. life. Yeah, that's why you move and you act in the spiritual life is because of your anxiety or fear about sinning when you're scrupulous.
So you're more worried about not sinning than you are loving your neighbor or loving God.
Exactly.
I mean, you do want to love God. That's ultimately kind of why you're so obsessed about it, but that's not, your focus is in the wrong place. Your focus is kind of a negative approach towards how can I just not overstep the boundaries and make sure I never fall into sin.
Right. And I think a helpful image is, you know, how you have the standard, you know, person who struggles with obsessive compulsive, you know, that wears the gloves and is all worried about meticulous about being clean or that kind of a thing. It just kind of think about, you know, that kind of glove wearing in the spiritual life. You know, that's kind of what scrupulosity is.
And let's be honest, like, I think of, this didn't really come up in our prep, but, like, I think of the Pharisees.
Yeah, exactly right.
I think ultimately this is a lot of the things, and we've talked about on this a lot, we've talked a decent amount about the Pharisees in this, in this podcast, and I know recently talking about the Sabbath, and kind of their approach, and they were, you wouldn't walk more than a certain number of steps, because they respected the Sabbath, right? But Jesus and his disciples are frolicking through the fields picking grain. And I mean, they're peaceful and they're joyful and they're following the spirit of the law, and they're ultimately the example, right? And we've talked about that before, but I think it's an important thing to realize. Like, we do have biblical examples of what this looks like as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think too, just thinking about the ferocity almost in the way in which Jesus treats the Pharisees, you know, that's kind of an indication of how serious of an issue this is. You know what I mean? The way the Pharisees act and, you know, how much of a detriment it is to the spiritual life. So,
So let's go a little deeper in identifying the problem. So I found a definition. This is from spiritualdirection.com. Father John Bartunek defines it this way. He says, "Scrupulosity is an oversensitivity to faults. It consists of seeing sin when there is no sin, which causes us to become emotionally tense and spiritually tied up in knots. It paralyzes the will, fills the mind with turbulence, and can cause intense interior suffering." How do you react to that description?
Yeah, there's a lot there. Just a couple key phrases that I want to mention are just the effect of it, paralyzing the will. Father John there said it paralyzes the will, which I think is just a really great kind of catch-all, you know, effect of it. It's just very difficult to act when you know, you're afraid everything's a sin. So, I really like what he had to say about it there. Seeing sin when there is no sin, that's true. I think maybe there's a little bit more to it though. You know, I think, we also talked about kind of the, you know, seeing as a sin as a sin, but just more grave than it is, which is another thing we need to talk about also. I think that's part of it. Yeah.
Right. And I think actually that's maybe something to really hone in on a little bit too is we sin all the time, right? And I think why scrupulosity is such a temptation for people is because of that fact. We do sin all the time, right? And so it's easy to hone in on it and get frustrated and be like, oh, I keep messing up. I keep messing up. I want to not do this again. And kind of not accept your own human frailty and accept the reality of like, of that sin is going to be a struggle for you. And so I think it causes us to hone in on what might be really minor sins. And see them as the gravest thing in the world. And it's really distracting us, I think, often, because I think we can talk more about this, but I think ultimately scrupulosity, it's a temptation of the enemy, to focus in on really small things that aren't the heart of the problem.
Right.
And it's distracting us from the heart of our relationship with God often.
Right. Yeah. And I also think scrupulosity too is just very, it's self-centered, I think also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, absolutely. It's a very, I'm focused on me and what I'm doing, or, you know, it's all about me and this, the acts that are the sins that I, you know, commit or so on and so forth. And, you know, what it's really about is God.
Right.
That should be the focus. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I think as we talk more about it, I think I want to drive home. I want people to understand why it's selfish, because I think as somebody who struggled, and we both have had scrupulous tendencies in our life, and I think in the moment when you are very scrupulous, it doesn't seem, you don't really realize that you're self-absorbed. You think you're just trying to do the right thing, but in reality, you're blind to others in your life a lot of the times. But right. Where I want to go is I want to make sure we just really understand this. So what does this look like practically? What's a way that somebody might experience scrupulosity?
Yeah, I think we've got a couple of examples. So one of the examples that I think of in particular is just being distracted during Mass. Let's take that as an example. So I'm in Mass, and here comes the consecration where the Eucharist is being, lifted up and, turned into the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. And I'm, my mind drifts off to, what I'm doing after this. Just unintentionally, it's just kind of the way that's how my mind flowed at that point in time.
Yeah,
I recognize it and I just freak out because I feel like I've done something terrible because I've gotten distracted during the Mass.
And you're going to fail to achieve your Sunday obligation
right.
because you weren't paying attention well enough.
Right. That would be an extreme. Yeah. Mm-hmm. An extreme, view.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, that's a good example, I think. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's taking things to the extreme, right? It's playing out in your head the worst case scenario or like the worst possible implications or effect of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one more example I would use too is, I know in conversation, I know I've had problems with this in the past, in conversation, mm-hmm. I'm always thinking about in conversation, am I saying the right thing? Am I saying what's charitable? Am I treating right. this person well? And it's just every time I make a little slip up in a word, I think, or whatever, it's just kind of, right. am I sinning? So yeah. there's always this moment to moment worry about whether or not I'm
right.
I'm acting in accord with God's will.
Or even in like, I've noticed that in evangelization, like as a missionary, it's like I'm encountering somebody and I know I have this opportunity to like bring something up or to just witness to them in some way. But I'm like obsessing in my mind about what is the exact right thing that's going to convert right. this person. And again, it's the self-absorption, right? I'm not thinking about, okay, I'm not entrusting this person to God in that moment. I'm figuring out what do I need to do? How can I say the right thing
yeah.
And not mess up?
Right.
I think one more, Nick, that I want to make sure to mention too is I think I've had a lot of people come to me asking questions about like impure thoughts before. Because a lot of people will, they have a thought in their mind and it's clearly not good and, seems sinful, right? And then they wonder, okay, was it a sin to think that? And then before they know it, they're thinking about it more because they're thinking about whether it was a sin or not. And it's like, oh, dang it. I thought about it for 5 more seconds. Like there's another sin. But I think that's like, I think that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And usually what I tell them is that the thought occurring is not a sin, carries no sin whatsoever. It's whether you choose to entertain it or not. And the problem with scrupulosity is it almost makes you obsess over it more and keeps you from getting it out of your head.
Yeah.
It's the classic example of, Nick, if I tell you not to think about an elephant, what are you thinking about?
Exactly right. An elephant.
Exactly.
Dylan.
Right? So I think scrupulosity in a way, like it's intending to avoid thinking about it or avoid doing it, avoiding sin. But in reality, it's actually coming to your mind more because
right.
of it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great way to explain it.
So yeah, I think those are some symptoms. Why is this a bad thing?
Oh my.
Why is it bad? I think that's a natural question, right? Like, why is it bad to be worried about sin? Aren't we supposed to be trying to avoid sin and be avoiding it at all costs? Why yeah. why is this unhealthy? What makes it unhealthy?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a certain sense in the spiritual life, where we have to discuss kind of the fruits of a healthy spiritual life. Mm-hmm. And one of those fruits of a healthy spiritual life is absolutely not anxiety and fear and obsession. That's not of the Holy Spirit and that's not of God.
Yeah.
So we have to say that there's probably something wrong in my spiritual life if it's guided by anxiety and fear,
Right.
People that, great saints, I think we're maybe discuss here, mm-hmm. Were guided by peace, even though they haven't had a determination to avoid sin. So,
yeah.
anyway, it's yeah. Causes one to lose their peace, I think, is the summary of what I said there.
Right. Yeah, I think of the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5. It's peace, joy, gentleness, love, patience, kindness, you know. But first and foremost, I think peace yeah. and joy being true marks of somebody who's not scrupulous, of somebody who's living a healthy spiritual life. And I think the more I read, like, in particular, Jacques Philippe or any of just, like, the spiritual writers, whether it's the saints or something like Jacques Philippe, who's a present-day spiritual writer, like, it's all about peace. You know, this book I have on my desk at the moment, Searching for and Maintaining Peace, just really drives home the point, like, we're not, as Christians, we're not meant to live in constant fear or anxiety. Like, peace is a fruit of the Spirit. And I think that a lot of times we get caught up in anxiety, and we think that it's just natural and it's supposed to be there. And true, sometimes there is psychological and physiological causes of your anxiety that's not solely a spiritual ailment. But I think when we do, and we are, you know, body, soul, and mind, right? You know, we're all those things, and we need to address physical health, mental health, and spiritual health. But I think we need to understand that anxiety is not a fruit of the Spirit when it comes to our spiritual life.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Gosh, it's so hard because, yeah, okay, I've got it. I'm scrupulous, and my life is not guided by peace. It's guided by anxiety and fear. So I think all of us who struggle with scrupulosity just aren't really questioning that it's disordered. I don't think that's true. I think the people yeah. that who's issued that, I think we all understand that it's a slavery and that we want to be free from it. You know, is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I mean, making blankets like we all
fair
is hard, but I think you're right. I think for a lot of people, it is clearly something. Like, I know when I am going through scrupulous periods, like, it's not something I desire or think is healthy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I think for a lot of people, I'll say, I won't make the blanket statement. For a lot of yeah. people, I think it's clear when it's a struggle that it's something I need to overcome. Mm-hmm. But the alternative is just seems to be not present. You know, that for me, I know, has been the issue. Most every time when I've, you know, had periods like this is, okay, I know it's disorder, but what's the alternative? Like, show me a different way to view the spiritual yeah. life that's compelling and that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, because what I'm doing is I'm trying to avoid sin. You know, I'm trying to avoid grave right. sin. You know, that seems like a good thing to do in the spiritual life. So, but it seems wrong the way I'm viewing it. So how should I view it?
Yeah.
You know, so there seems to be like a lack of an alternative.
Well, yeah, I think maybe a starting place for thinking about that is actually thinking about, okay, what are the examples we know of that are the virtuous example of right. you know, what scrupulosity isn't? What does it look like to be healthy and not scrupulous?
Right. Or should we maybe go down the road of what's on the other side of the spectrum? What's not healthy okay, yeah, the
yeah.
other way?
Maybe yeah, that let's first, start maybe? There. So yeah. let's maybe assume it's kind of a you know, Aristotelian mean, so to speak. So
right.
Aristotle, the way he thought of virtue is there's a vice on one extreme, a vice on the other extreme, and virtue is in the middle. So if scrupulosity is a vice on one extreme, then the opposite extreme would be what?
Yeah, just I think what you have written down here is a lax conscience is the phrase. Just yeah. like a, you know, whatever, it's fine. I can go out and do right. whatever, and the Lord will love me, and no problem.
Yeah, yeah, and, that kind of thing. And to be honest, I think that's pretty prevalent. You know,
right,
I think that, I mean, we're talking about scrupulosity. I'd say probably more people fall into the error of a lax conscience than scrupulosity.
Yeah.
So, you agree with that?
I would say so. Yeah. Amongst the wider community, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think when it comes to, you know, people who are actively pursuing the Lord, you know, and all in,
right.
Scrupulosity might tend to be the vice we're more likely to fall into than lax conscience.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. So what's in the middle? I mean, maybe we don't have the exact name for the virtue, but what is it? What does it look like to be in the middle?
A great question. Yeah. So let's maybe talk about a way to come to the middle if we're stuck on one, closer to one extreme than the other. You know,
right.
I love the image. It's just always been helpful for me and just in my life in general and building virtue. Just having that what Dylan called the Aristotelian scale or whatever it is. You know, just having the one vice on one side of the other of the line. You know, okay, let's say I'm on the side of scrupulosity on that line, on that scale. You know, maybe I just orient my life more on the lax conscience side, but closer to the middle.
Right.
And then maybe it's just maybe I just waver, that's too much of an issue. Maybe I just waver back to the scrupulous side, but closer to the middle even more now.
Right.
And it's just like this fluctuation back and forth, of coming closer and closer to the middle until I reach. Once again, I'm using my hands.
Yeah.
our listeners can't see, but this fluctuation of coming more and more towards the middle and just jumping back and forth from one side to the other until we've hit the center.
And I think that's good. And I think that is part of the process, right? Like you have to kind of force yourself to the other extreme. But I think a challenge with that is, especially for a scrupulous person, right? It's really hard for a scrupulous person to just have a lax conscience.
No, it is. Yeah, I guess I oversimplified that a lot, Let's see, what does that look like practically? I'm not really sure.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because I think that is important, but I think it also helps us identify the difficulty of a scrupulous person is with other things, it might be like, maybe this is a bad example, but gluttony versus starvation and moderation is in the middle, right? That may not get those exactly.
Sure.
Classical terms, but, right. So I'm struggling with gluttony. Well, I'm going to start fasting, right? And maybe I overdo the fasting a little bit, but that's going to help me work towards, an extreme, right? Not a perfect example, but that's in a sense easier than, I think that's challenging. Fasting's not easy for anybody, but I think even that is easier than it is for a scrupulous person to just say, forget it. I'm just going to stop thinking about this, stop worrying about it, and just be lax about it. I think that's a really challenging thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see. What is the central virtue between scrupulosity and a lax conscience look like? That was the original question, I think, right? That's difficult to say. Let me try and formulate something here. I think maybe, just this. I'm always coming towards the image of focusing on God. So me never leaving my gaze from the Lord. So I'm always kind of gazing at the Lord and never at my sin.
Mm-hmm.
If I have something that's my quote unquote sin that's bugging me in the spiritual life, I'll just kind of turn and brush it off, and then I'll go back to gazing at the Lord. So it's kind of like my focus.
It's turned outward.
Yeah, it is. It's turned outward, and it's only comes inward in so far as it needs to in order to remove obstacles.
Right. I think that is key. Because like we talked about, scrupulosity, it is a very self-absorbed thing. And so anything I think that can get you outside of yourself a little bit, even if that's I think honestly, something that's really helpful with scrupulosity is living a well-balanced life all the way around.
Right.
Being physically healthy, doing what you need to take care of yourself physically and emotionally as well, I think can help, because a lot of times scrupulosity is just a spiritual manifestation of a emotional problem or a psychological problem. So I think those things can help. And even counseling for people.
Right.
What can we do? But I want to dwell a little bit more on what is the goal, right? I think ultimately of the saints. I think of John Paul II in particular, somebody who to me seemed like somebody who was profoundly free, and just had an interior peace that radiated, right? And you might think of other saints that you know or admire as well. But I think ultimately, a lot of the Saints really radiate this, in the sense that they're profoundly at peace, and they're not self-absorbed. I also think of so Christopher West, you know, he's a theology of the body speaker, and he talks about this man named Lorenzo Albacetti. And he was a theologian. He died recently. But he just describes him. He's a friend of John Paul II as well. And he was a mentor to Christopher West, and he just describes him as this like profoundly free man. He says he was like a disheveled, overweight, like just like on the outside, just like didn't look put together, but interiorly he just was profoundly free. And in talking to him, he just exuded this peace. And I think a lot of times a scrupulous person doesn't exude that.
Yeah. So, but I think that still leaves the question of like, how can I have that?
Yeah. I just wanted to identify what that is, because I don't think we fully did that for the listeners. Like, what is the goal? I think the goal is, would you say, freedom?
Yeah.
Right?
No, absolutely right.
Like, freedom from that internal anxiety that scrupulosity is.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess, too, that comes back to the question, though, of, you know, let's say I'm struggling with scrupulosity and, you know, I know it's disordered. And I know I need freedom from this slavery. I need that peace. But there's still the question of how provide me an alternative.
Yeah,
you know, of what
of
what I can do to have that freedom or peace. Yeah. You know.
So a few things that I know, both from personal experience and from what good counsel, good priests, good pastors, I think have told me and have written about. Is I think one thing that's really important is some kind of spiritual direction. Having somebody that you can go to, and they can really just tell you, like, no, you don't need to be worried about that thing. Somebody that you trust, who's a moral authority. And, you know, maybe it's a spiritual director, maybe it's a priest you go to confession with. Just bring up with, like, hey, like, is this a mortal sin? Is this really, like, a mortal sin? Or, like, is this... should I be worried about this? And for somebody who truly is scrupulous, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be, no, you're overreacting to that. And I think when it's somebody you can trust as a moral authority, something that was really helpful for scrupulous people is obedience. Being obedient to an authority outside of yourself. And when that authority is a trusted, moral authority from the church, I think that is something that can provide a lot of peace for somebody who's scrupulous.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. You know, one thing that I think has really helped me personally is just having community. I think just this issue of scrupulosity is so tied to like just feeling like you have to earn love, kind of a thing. You just have to, earn it, and, you know, God's not on your side, and you have to prove to him, you know, that he's, you know, that you're worth his love, kind of a thing. And any slip up is a proof that, you know, you're not worth his love. You know, just having a community that you're a part of really just takes away that fear, you know, having people around you that are Christ to you, you know, and, show you his love in a way, you know, that you didn't have before, you know,
right.
And that again helps. That comes back to the, you know, bringing you outside of your self image,
right?
You know? But yeah, that I know personally in my life, that has erased. I mean, like almost erased my issues with, you know, with this kind of a thing. You know, just having a great community.
Wow.
Wow. So anyway, that's another thing.
I think. So those are a couple good things. I think community, but then also good counsel. I think that's probably the most fruitful thing for me. Yeah, I would say the same about community and about, just anything that I'd say also even community, but also a sense of mission, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think scrupulosity, it's focused on the spiritual life in a very narrow way. It's focused on not sinning, right? But the spiritual life is so much more than not sinning.
Yep.
it's about virtue, right? And cultivating virtue, which is a positive thing. It's something we have to grow in and cultivate and work towards. And we can't become virtuous by sitting in our room all day.
Yeah.
And I think that's like ultimately like this image, like what scrupulosity is. It's sitting in your room all day and thinking that you're becoming holy because you're not sinning. Well,
wow.
Sure, maybe you're not sinning, but you're not really growing either. So I think having a sense of mission, being active, whether that's taking on community service of some kind, becoming active in your church, do something to get you outside of yourself. You have to get outside of your room.
Right. Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah. You know, when you said when you said sitting in your room all day, I was thinking about me and teleworking.
Yeah.
It's like, dang, I suck.
Yeah. No, I'm good. And that's somewhere we can totally go as well with this conversation, because I think that what the year 2020 has brought us is a real occasion for scrupulosity. We have being isolated, being turned in on ourselves, a lot of people working remotely, not having a lot of human interaction, but then also being told with some good reason, like the virus is serious. Before, you know, anybody takes anything I say out of context, the coronavirus is serious. We need to take it seriously, right? But at the same time, like there's this attitude of intense fear,
right?
Of if I get too exposed, if I'm around too many people, I could catch the virus, but I think for a scrupulous person, it's more so I'm going to give somebody else the virus,
right?
And then their grandmother's going to die and it's my fault.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that's something I think we're seeing even people who don't maybe know that they struggle with scrupulosity or maybe don't normally struggle with scrupulosity, I think are exhibiting that fear in that way.
Yeah. And so here's the tricky part about scrupulosity, though. This is why it's tricky to overcome, is because you could make the case that that's true.
Right.
Right? That, okay, like I'm flaunting around without a mask and I'm hugging people and kissing them on the cheek in the grocery store, you know. Hey, how you doing? You
don't wait. That's, why are you doing that?
Wait, you don't do that?
No. Okay, I thought
that's why I'm getting those funny looks. But anyway, that could be true, you know, like you're walking around the grocery store and like, you know, you get someone sick and their grandmother dies.
Right.
You know, that could be true. So like, shouldn't I worry about that? You know?
Right.
And so this is the hard part, that this is the slavery that scrupulosity kind of creates. It has this rope around you and it kind of pulls you back in, you know, in the name of truth, you know,
right.
It creates a falsehood.
Yeah. I mean, the enemy is deceitful and he can work on the level of the intellect, right? And confuse us. And I think ultimately one of the consequences of scrupulosity, I think this is a great example to think about it with, because I can think myself into a frenzy about that, thinking about all the scenarios that if I go out to this place and you know, I happen to be positive, all the different scenarios of people I could spread it to and how that could end up being really, really bad. I can think myself into a frenzy. And so I think it really is an opportunity where, you know, by the fall, our reason is imperfect. Our reason is distorted. And so we can, and we do all the time, convince ourselves of falsehoods. But that being said, I think it's also important to understand, like, you know, mortal sin especially, conditions are grave matter, full knowledge, and full consent of will. And so when we're dealing with area where there's a lot of unknown, right, again, you should take proper precautions, but you can't control every single detail of your life, right?
Right.
And so these things that happen, even spreading a virus, that are beyond your reasonable control, if you're taking the reasonable precautions that you should take, right? Like, you're not morally culpable for spreading the virus in the same way that you would be if you're doing things intentionally, right?
Right.
And so that's a challenge for anybody who's scrupulous. I think people in general, right? This is all new and we're figuring it out.
Right.
But I think that's why I say it is just such an occasion for scrupulosity, because there's unknown, right?
Right.
Scrupulous people, we love knowns. Like, just tell me what God's will is and I'll do it.
Right.
But when it's just unclear, that's where I think people can think themselves sick.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah, the ambiguity creates scrupulosity, I think, a lot of times. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, the COVID situation is difficult. You know, right. It seems to be framed in two extremes. You know, the extremes right. that we were talking about. It's like you're the person who doesn't believe that COVID exists, or you're the right. person that's like hanging out in their closet, you know, for 10 months. Yeah. You know, it's one or the other. I feel like so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I bring it up not to dwell on COVID, but right. I think, you know, I think it's interesting to me that if we're acting this way, and, you know, is this something that's actually present in kind of our spiritual lives, that we already, like, our approach to morality is already maybe a little distorted, a little fear-driven, maybe, more so than love-driven?
Right. Yeah. It's so hard. I still feel a little bit unsatisfied, kind of the way we've gone with it, because I still feel like we haven't provided an alternative, a way in which to view, you know, the spiritual life, so that a scrupulous person can be free from what they're yeah. experiencing. You yeah. know, it's hard. I mean, I don't pretend to have the answer, you know, but
yeah.
let's try and get there if we can.
I do have some more. I think some more suggestions okay. on that matter. So. One thing I think of, and I may have talked about this with you before, but the parable of the talents. And this isn't like this is one way I've come to read the parable of the talents. So, you know, quick overview. Three servants of the master are given wealth. One's given 10 talents. One's given 5 talents. One's given 1 talent, right? Okay. And a talent is a large sum of money. I think it's like more than 10. It's a lot of years of wages, essentially. And the person with 10 and the person with 5 go invest it, and they increase the wealth, bring it back to the master. The master rewards him. The person with 1 talent goes and buries it in the ground, because he says that he knew that his master was demanding and expected much, and he was afraid. So he buried the talent, right? So I think we see fear. So my theory is that the man who buried the talent was a scrupulous man. Because we see the fear there. We also see an unwillingness to take a risk. Because what these other two men did is they invested. Investment involves risk, right? Investment, at least in the modern sense, I don't know as much about in that time, but it involves risk, right? There's the stock market's a risky thing. They're not investing in the stock market in that sense, but like they still had to go out and invest the money, right? They're taking a risk. But this man was not afraid. He's the man who's hiding in his room because he doesn't want to mess up. And he buries the talent. And the master has the kind of response we see Jesus have with the Pharisees, right?
It's fierce.
Yeah. And so ultimately, I think we have to stop thinking like that man and start thinking like the men who are willing to take a risk for the sake of something greater.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, the risk-taking thing is huge. I'm glad you brought that up. I hadn't thought about that yet. Yeah, I definitely see that in my own life and my own experiences with the struggle, you know, just, you know, my experience as a soccer coach, just take that for example, maybe even you as a teacher, I don't know, you can say. But sometimes, like, I won't say anything because I'm afraid of saying something that I don't mean, or that'll be hurtful, or, you know, that'll come out in a way that was, you know, inappropriate, or, you know, sometimes I'm afraid to, you know, say something or do something as a coach out of, you know, fear of sinning, doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You know, and there's an element of I have to put myself out there and act and trust in the mercy of God, and trust in in Him to act through me,
right?
Despite my faults, because there are faults, you know, and there will be.
And here's in that context, here's the thing I would tell somebody, and that I think learned to tell myself and experience a lot of growth in is, God never promised you that you wouldn't sin, but God promises His mercy, every day. You know, so like we can always hope in God's mercy. So if we mess up, it's not the end of the world. because we can always seek God's mercy and he'll always be there for us.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what a scrupulous person ultimately needs to realize is the end of the world isn't them committing a sin. And in fact, growing in the spiritual life, you know, it's the whole idea of our faith of oh, happy fault, you know, like the fact that because we sinned, you know, referring to original sin, but also our particular sin, we get to know the merciful love of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And so it's this paradox of actually through my striving and through my messing up and falling short, but striving even more and through the growth, I know the redemptive, saving, sanctifying love of Jesus Christ. And that's something to rejoice in. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something far greater than being locked up in your room and never messing up in the first place.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I am. Yeah, so much there. Dylan's giving me the signal. Is that 40 minutes?
Yeah.
40? Yeah. You said it. You had it backwards. It looked like 4 minutes to me.
We're 4 minutes into the podcast here. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, I'm sure you're imagining our expensive studio with our clock above the door. But
we don't have a clock.
We don't have a clock. It consists of Dylan holding up 4 and 0 to indicate we're 40 minutes in.
I'm counting the time with my fingers as we go.
Okay, that's not true. Yeah, he just actually let's do this next episode. One of us will just go. The other person will talk.
Yeah, let's not do that.
All right, what was I saying? Oh shoot. Totally lost it. Oh yeah. I there's definitely the idea of mercy involved here and how the scrupulous person has just forgotten about the mercy of God. That's they've forgotten about him, about that, you know, and which is
or forgotten or not even known in a impactful way.
Right. Yeah, it's not experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. There's such an element. I'm looking back to the saints now too, because they seem just, you know, determined to, you know, just hating sin, but really just unaffected by it. Does that sound right? Just unaffected by when they sin. Just that's totally not the focus of their life at all. It's on doing the Father's will, and you know, it's
right.
And yeah, okay, great saints have written about avoiding sin and so on and so forth.
Not agitated
by right.
It. You know, I think of like especially the Carmelite saints, talk about not allowing anything to disturb your peace or agitate you, even your own shortcomings, your distractions and your sins and your failings. So it's having a very deep aversion to sin and desiring to root it out of your life, but not in an obsessive or anxious way.
I think this ties hand in hand with how we view Satan as well. And I think this is the way that I've kind of thought about this that I found to be particularly helpful in the spiritual life with, you know, viewing Satan and his kind of, you know, effort to bring us down as Christians, you know. We should ignore Satan. What I mean is, I don't mean just acting like he's not there, like just saying that he doesn't exist or he's not working. Ignoring means that you acknowledge that thing is there and you choose to not give it attention.
Yeah.
So the ignorance inherently says that you acknowledge that thing is there. You know it's there. You're not saying it's not there. You know it's there, and you're choosing to look past. So I have this, you know, let's say Satan or my sin or whatever. I'm ignoring it in the sense that I know it's there, and I'm choosing to look past it in the spiritual life.
Or reject it, maybe.
Right.
Reject the voice of the enemy.
Sure. Yeah, but I think ignorance is even a stronger word. Ignorance is even a stronger word.
Yeah.
I mean, rejection is right, of course, too. But I think ignorance is that makes the efforts of the enemy more futile, just because. It seems to be more of a slap in the face than rejection for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah. I think. That makes sense. I think ultimately you want to get to the point where you can ignore it. I think maybe why I say rejection is that's like a means to getting there. Like you can't always just ignore it right away, but maybe it's recognizing first, like, okay, this is not of the Lord.
Oh, sure.
I'm going to reject it.
Got it.
But the goal is, yeah, I can go about it. You know, those thoughts come up and I'm able to just move on and ignore it. But I think right. It starts with a conscious recognition that it's not of the Lord.
Right.
And rejecting sure. it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's really important. I think the voice, knowing the voice of God versus the voice of the enemy. The enemy is the accuser. That's Satan's name in scripture. That's one of the meanings of Satan. God is not the accuser. The one who's accusing you, who's beating you down, making you feel unworthy, that's not God. And I think that's the challenge. That's one of the great challenges of the spiritual life, right? Is, you know, Jesus in scripture says, my sheep know my voice. My sheep know my voice. And it's not always easy to get there, right? We don't always easily discern the Lord's voice, but the saints know his voice and they know the enemy's voice and they know to reject the enemy's voice. So it's ultimately something that it's hard to do. And that's why scrupulosity is something that's so hard to overcome, right? Because it's hard to know with certainty in the moment that this is, you know, the voice of the enemy, or this is just the voice in my own head, and to reject it. And that's something where I think discernment of spirits, read into discernment of spirits. Father Timothy Gallagher has a good book on it. Dan Burke has a good book on it, Spiritual Warfare and the Discernment of Spirits. Just read the rules, 14 rules for discernment that Ignatius wrote about discerning God's voice for the enemy's voice. So those are some other, I think, practical things that I would encourage anybody, period, to look into. Anybody right. serious about the spiritual life.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, I think maybe a couple of things I would add are, seek out community. Like I said before, community, mm-hmm. Healthy community is so powerful in overcoming scrupulosity. It teaches you the love of God. And I have one other, but yeah. I forgot, so I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, God is love. God loves you, and he desires you to be free. And I think that's a truth you need to learn to believe if you don't believe that, or if you have a hard time believing that. Because that's, I think, where the heart of this is. We get so absorbed in ourselves, and we forget those fundamental truths. But I don't know about you, but I want to be the person who just lives in total freedom.
Yeah. And the Lord said in Matthew, come to me, all you labor and are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. Mm-hmm. Rest is such a powerful word for the scrupulous person. Yeah. That's just the antithesis of what, someone who's struggling with scrupulosity experiences.
It's just a lack of rest.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just the inability to rest or let the shoulders drop, just to think that's what Jesus right. provides, is just infinite rest,
Right. Because it's just that feeling of like I know I feel this in myself, just as an anxious person in general, like a person very prone to anxiety. Sometimes it's like, all right, things are going well. Like I'm not like obsessing about anything. Like life's pretty good. Like I'm gonna relax. Wait a second. Something must be wrong, right? Something must be wrong. Things can't be this good. I can't be this at peace. And that's where I think the enemy really has an opportunity to sneak in, because he knows you're vulnerable, right? You have this state of, you think that the norm, that what your spiritual life should be like, is you should be anxious, right? But that's not the goal, and that's not what it should be like.
Right. Bang.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm passionate about this because I've experienced tremendous growth. I think that scrupulosity will probably always be a tendency that I have, just as part of my disposition. I'm a pretty intense person, a pretty type A person. So I think I'm prone to that. But I've experienced so much growth and freedom from some of these things we've shared. And I desire for people who struggle with that mindset to have a shift, because I know that it's so wrong and it's so enslaving as well.
It is. Yeah. It's a powerful word. Yeah. We want freedom. We don't want slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else, Nick?
I think that's it for me.
All right. Be free.
Yeah.
Just dwell in freedom.
I feel like we need a really nice rap to end our
Well, you're the rap guy.
Let's not. I'm just kidding.
All right. This has been Colloquium. This has been our conversation on scrupulosity. Go have good conversations yourself. Bada bing, bada boom.